I remember you.
I almost pressed the wrong button on the thing and hung up on you instead.
Shortest podcast episode ever.
Buttons are confusing.
It's true. So true.
You are likely to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I talked to you a couple days ago.
I'm very happy to see you. Yes, I am now on the Retro Computing Roundtable podcast. I'm there sometimes, and you're there sometimes, and sometimes we intersect.
We do. We did.
Yeah.
And now we're intersecting here again.
We are. Am I using the right microphone? Is this the right mic?
Yeah, you're thumping, you're tapping into my head
good,
right
oh,
now.
Oh, good. Hello, hello, listeners. Hello, listeners. This is Kay. I've missed you all so much.
Oh, sexy Kay. So we played a game. I don't remember the format of the show. What do we do first?
you played a game. First we make pleasant talk and people get excited by our sparkly person.
That'd be this part. This is the pleasant part.
Then we read some mail, which is going to take a while because we have more than like 13 months of mail to catch up on.
Oh, I don't think I loaded up any mail. Do we have mail?
I have some.
Okay, good.
And then we talk about a game.
A game?
And that we played, in air quotes. We. And then we talk about another game to play in the future.
I like it. That sounds like a good show.
13 months from now, we have another episode.
Well, 13 at least. Got to give some time to play. These games are hard. So people wrote us? People missed us?
Yes.
Oh, that was nice of people.
That was nice of them. Let's read some of the things they said so we can feel good about ourselves.
I like it. What'd they say?
I don't know.
No.
Really, it has been a while since we've done this, hasn't it? Kay and Carrington really lost their mojo. I used to like listening, but now they don't know. Let's see. A lovely trip down memory lane, said Aaron Hack last November. Hi, Carrington and Kay. I've been working my way through your podcast for a bit now, and was finally forced to write in when you started sampling from Dave Letterman's mailbag theme in your episodes on Suspect and A Mind Forever Voyaging. That's about 4 years ago for you, longer now. But I must now add to your stacks and stacks of letters.
Letters! Stacks!
I was a bit late to Infocom Games since I was born in 1980. At some point in the early 90s, I was sitting in my grandparents' basement where my uncle's old computer had been set up. I was flipping through a box of his old floppy disks when I found one labeled The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, I don't know. An easy one.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if it was a pirated copy, but any original packaging was long gone. There was at least an InvisiClues book, partially revealed. Having been introduced to Hitchhikers by my favorite teacher a couple of years earlier, I was shocked to find that there was a computer game version, and apparently my uncle had also been a fan of the series. I popped in the disc with no idea what I was in for. I had already played some of Uncle Mark's other mid-80s games, Case of ZZT, I think is how you would say it, Bouncing Babies, Rampage, Dig Dug, etc. It is
Bouncing Babies.
I don't know. I don't know Caves of ZZT. I don't know Bouncing Babies. Rampage and Dig Dug, I've heard of them.
Me too.
This was amazingly different. I managed to stumble and cheat my way onto the Heart of Gold, but gave up shortly after that. I've always fondly remembered playing Arthur Dent in the basement and trying to understand the insanity of this on the screen in front of me. I've heard bits and pieces about the golden age of Infocom games and generally been wistful about having missed out. when I found your podcast, I knew I had to listen. I've thoroughly enjoyed all of the episodes so far, and I'm glad that you are still releasing new ones. I had to facepalm upon realizing that, of course, anything that could fit on a floppy disk has the kind of following Infocom has will have been made available on modern technology. I'm not a purist, so I'm willing to make do with in-browser emulators and scan browsies and feelies. I am just thrilled to be able to join in on the fun. As an added bonus, my middle school daughter has her daughter's a middle school? That's awesome. How do you? my middle school daughter has noticed me playing and is intrigued. Based on your recommendations, we will be starting Ballyhoo soon. I hope to get her hooked on this style of games. Thank you for podcasting with each other, Aaron Hack. Thank you, Aaron.
I wonder how that went, because Ballyhoo's a good one.
It's a good one. And now it's been more than a year since Aaron wrote that, so they've probably finished it by now.
It can sometimes take that long to finish a game. I don't judge.
I would like to hear back from you, Aaron, and hear how it went playing Ballyhoo with your daughter, who has probably no hands because she's in middle school. So that's, maybe
schools
she's
can play.
Yeah, sure. Do you have one to read, or are you?
Yeah, I fired up my email. I'm looking for things that are colored purple, which means they were sent to the
mine get a email star. Address.
Got one from Michael that says, I'm really enjoying Eaten by a Crew and listening to The Hitchhikers. When was this sent? This was sent August. So that would be valid. I'm really, really, really enjoying listening to Eaten by a Crew and listening to The Hitchhikers episode has inspired me to re-listen to my original bootlegs of the BBC radio play. They were gifted to me on cassette back in the early 90s by a British coworker. I have no idea where the actual tapes ended up, but the MP3s are still on my hard drive. Time to fire up the iPod. I agree with that. I am a massive fan of all things Hitchhikers, including and probably especially the original radio program, like the fit the first through.
This is Carrington now we're listening to, right? You're not reading the letter anymore?
I'm just talking.
Okay, yeah, you're reading. Okay.
It's very hard to tell because Michael's voice apparently is just like mine. So, everyone sounds like me. And so back in the day, I had the CDs, the original release of the CD version of the BBC show that came on these, they had these bright colored metallic covers on each one. And I had missed that particular version of the edits of the show because a lot of online ones are slightly different than that for some reason. So I sought those out again and reacquired them through the magic of eBay. And then I still had my old album of the original album from back in the day, the first two albums. And I recently picked up the reissue of the first couple. So I've got the first three Hitchhikers
like,
on albums.
Like on vinyl?
On vinyl. On big, giant, heavy, heavy vinyl packages with tons of posters and things in them. It's great. And then also the Dirk Gently, the first two books of Dirk Gently are on vinyl as well. And they're amazing reissues. Super, super, can't recommend them enough. They're fantastic. So.
Wow. Nice.
Hooray for vinyl.
Hooray for vinyl.
Scratchy, popping, terrible sounding vinyl. That other people claim sounds better. It doesn't. I just like to hold big things when I listen to stuff.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Are you finished with that letter?
I'm finished with that letter. Okay. I finished a long time ago.
All right, sorry. All
right, I Michael. Just started to ramble.
here's a letter from Giovanni that does not stand up to the test of time. Okay. Hello, Gurus. So glad you restarted at a tighter pace on your podcast. We missed you. Johnny, you made a funny joke. Now you're playing Adventureland. In case you did not discover it, here's a fun fact for you. In 1980, Scott Adams had the program listing for Adventureland published in an issue of Softside, one of the magazines that was popular at the time. When I discovered it, I was amazed by the idea that such a milestone in text adventures, a place of history, could be just the relatively few pages of code I had in front of me. Program optimization required by the limited computer memory available at the time was such a great thing. You may have a look. You may have a look in the Internet Archive. Here are a couple of Here's a couple of pictures in the copy I was lucky enough to buy on eBay a long time ago from my small collection of adventure games. How to Be Adventuring, and please, please, sooner or later, do play Fish by Magnetic Scrolls and a Legend Entertainment game, maybe Spellcasting 101, maybe the less serious but fun Eric the Unready. Giovanni from Florence. Giovanni sent some lovely pictures of Adventureland code that you could type in, which might be more fun than actually playing the game.
Maybe. could be. We get a nice one from Jeff. A lot of people wrote to say, hey, where are you guys? when podcasts take a time or break, whatever.
Guys, are you dead? Where are you? We missed you.
But there was a nice response to that, the little gap from Jeff, who says, hi, guys, ? Did I finally get in the way of gaming? Are you done with the podcast? Good Lord, I hope not. You both have amazing chemistry and a talent for this. Eaten by a Grew is my favorite podcast, and I always love seeing new episodes pop up. Hope you continue the gaming journey and podcast. But if you aren't into this any longer, thanks for the laughs and good times. That was a super nice way to inquire and to say, like, if that was it, then thanks. Wasn't it? We're still going. We're plugging away. It's awesome. Yeah. Good. Hooray,
games. We're plugging away. What'd you do for the last year? What since last time I talked to you on this podcast?
I played very few text adventures. Yeah. Like, that's the thing I didn't do. I got into vintage arcade games again, rebuilt a MAME thing. So I've been playing a lot of those. I was talking about it on RCR, or maybe after RCR, who knows? At some point, you and I were chatting. Yeah. My original MAME setup, I found I wasn't playing the games. You set up MAME or something like that. I've got a Raspberry Pi running it, RetroPie, and you get access to 2,000 games with effectively infinite quarters. Yeah. And I found I just didn't play any of them.
I never
touched them.
I have two MAME setups in my garage, one with a vertical screen and one with a horizontal screen.
Good. And, nice.
And I, one of them set up to do even video disc games. It's got the Dragon's Lair emulator on there. I mean, I made a nice little setup, and I never played them.
Right.
Never.
And I found the same thing. I'd set up these things, and I never, ever played them. But I kind of wanted to. Like, I like arcade games, but, like, when do you spend time in them? And then I started thinking it was the infinite access to stuff was just, like, too much, or I wasn't valuing it, or there was something stopping me from playing these things. But I knew in my heart I did actually like them. So I started again. I picked up a little mini arcade thing sold by Arcade 1-Up. I think it's called Partycade. It can mount to a wall. It's a small vertical screen thing. And just used it as a starting point. Ripped it open, stuck a Raspberry Pi in there, changed the joystick to be a 4-way, 8-way switchable thing. But then wrote a little script that makes one game available. So I got all my vertical games on there because it's vertical screen for now. And every month, it becomes a dedicated one-game machine. And so I started with Frogger because I was like, okay, I got to pick something to start off. Do Frogger. Yeah. And then after that, I had Agent Super Bond for a month. I'm like, what the heck is Agent Super Bond? But because it was like the only game available, then I was like, okay, I'm digging it. I started playing things again. I've now enabled quarters on it, and I get $5 a month. So I have $5 worth of quarters. That's what I get to play. And because I've got something like 300 games here that on the vertical ones that will cycle through once a month, once the game is gone, I probably won't see it again for like 15 years.
Right. How so are you whenever picking I look the over games? And I see the game. Random or how are you picking the
No, games? Just totally random. I put all the games in there and said, you pick for me. Pick the game. So I have no control. That's just on the first of the month, a new game appears. I have $5 worth of quarters that I can spend or not spend. But I'm also always aware that I have this 1 month to play that game. And once it's gone, this script is not bringing it back maybe for 10 years. Right. And I could obviously play it again, or I could seek it out in an arcade or something. But making it like a limited time thing and making me have a limited number of quarters. So if I end up with a game that's a quarter muncher, I'm like, oh, I've only got the $5 and that's it.
Wow. That's
that's really worked for me. I'm now playing this. I spent my whole $5 last month. and this month. So I'm out. Like, I can't play the game at the moment. I'm out of my $5 worth of quarters.
So you went from not being motivated to play the games to being not being able to play the games.
Well, yeah, but also kind of more appreciating it, like, because it's a limited time thing.
$5 and quarter. So you play the game 20 times and
that's it. And that's what you get. And so every time I play it, I'm like, and if I mess up a game, I'm like, oh, I just spent one of my quarters. So like, and I play it, I'm trying to learn the game and I have like this new appreciation. And because honestly, I can only spend so much time playing an old arcade game. Sure. I'm never going to sit down and dedicate 12 hours to this.
If you want more, do you have to call up your mom and go, "Mom, get more quarters"?
Yeah, please. Have some more quarters. Or remember, I really like the game, and if I'm ever at an arcade or I go down to something like in the States that has them, and I see it, I'm like, "Oh, I love that game. I miss playing." And so it turns out I need limitations, and it makes me appreciate it. I mean, I've kind of always known it about myself, like limitations make me actively appreciate stuff, and it's worked really. So that's the thing I did this year. I set up a main machine that I'm actually now using.
Nice. Yeah. Congratulations. You're a weird fellow.
It's part of this philosophy I have called the medium towel. I learned ages ago that whatever I have, like, no matter how good it is, like, I simply get used to it. It becomes a new baseline and I no longer appreciate it, no matter what it is. So if I have the world's fluffiest, largest, most absorbent, perfect towel, then every day when I shower, which I do every day, you're welcome. At first, if I have the perfect towel, I will love it. Every day I'll get up and wrap myself, it'll be amazing. But by month three, it's the towel I have. And from then on, any other towel, every time I'm on vacation, friends, whatever, is a worse experience. And all I ever get is a chance to be disappointed by towels. But if I have as my daily driver, like a 60% quality thing that I get used to, then every once in a while, I get to have a fluffy towel on vacation and go, this is amazing. And I can have great experiences because I don't ruin it by just having the best of everything and I won't appreciate it. It's the way I'm wired. So I have to have okay things all the time so I have the opportunity to have great things. And I need to impose that on myself. It's the way I work. So it took me a long time to realize this about myself.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a medium towel philosophy. Everyone needs a towel philosophy. That's mine. What about you? What's your towel like?
Always have your towel with you. I know that. You always need your towel. I would always use the fluffiest towel possible every day.
Okay.
But do you then
appreciate it? Like, are you always aware of how good it is?
Yeah, I think I am.
I don't.
Yeah, I really think that. Yeah. When I have access to things that are amazing, I think I appreciate them often. Not every day, but often enough.
That's how your marriage has worked. So that's why it's worked out.
Well, I don't know about that. let's see. My year can be – this is my excuses for not playing the game. Can boil down to three things. I took a very intensive jazz piano course. I added 1.1 million pages of amateur radio material to the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications at Internet Archive.
So much.
Yeah. And I did, in the last few months, 15 interviews with Atari people for the Antic podcast.
Which was your goal for the year, to hit that 15?
Which was my goal. And I'm a person who needs a deadline. If I don't have so that's like why Adventureland didn't get played. I didn't have a deadline, you know. I am a person who needs a deadline. That's what I know about myself. And every year I set a goal for a number of interviews to do for the year. Last year, 2023, I had a goal, and I didn't make it at all. I did one interview. Fine. Okay, fine.
And that wasn't your goal? Do an interview?
My goal was 12 or 15 or something like that. It was a big number. This year, my goal was 15 for 2024. And then it got to be beginning of October, and I realized I hadn't done any. And it was just like, you know, I don't have to make my goal, but am I still a person who does Atari interviews? Is that part of what I is that still important to me? Is that still part of my identity? Because I did one in 2023, and if I do none or in 2024, then maybe that's, you know, and so I'm
which
just
is
like,
also no. Okay. It's okay to realize sometimes that thing is not a thing anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's okay to change goals, to change what's important in your life. Absolutely. But it was October and I was just like, well, it's time for me to decide. And I was just like, no, I still want to be the Atari interview guy. There's still people I want to talk to and things I want to learn, and it's fun. So I buckled down starting in October and I did an interview a week and got them published, and 15 are done for the year. And some of them are really good.
And a lot of things, like if you have a goal, you want to read, I don't know, 100 works of classic literature, you can kind of say, I'll do it when I'm 80. But if you want to interview people who were involved in like classic computer times, time's a ticket. It's a literally dying pool of people. Mm-hmm. And so you can't kind of put it off. You either got to do it now or accept it's not going to get done.
Right. There was one, I don't want to, I could guess, but going to my blog and searching for the word cocaine, because I know that I mentioned it. Here it is. In 2016, I'm quoting myself here, I interviewed 146 people in 2016, and I wrote, I don't know what sort of caffeine-fueled, Adderall-enhanced cocaine I was on that year, but that was a crazy number of interviews to research into. So when you said 15, it's not a big number. It's really not.
Well, I mean, okay, but that also is an insane number of people to interview. Like, there's got to be some sort of balance. Right. Yeah. I think you should interview one person a month. You pay them a total of $5, a quarter a sentence, and you'll appreciate it.
Excellent.
That's how you set it up.
This episode has taken weird directions of life philosophies. Should we read some more? Oh, wait, you put a link into our show notes. You said, read this review. Do you want to read
it? I did.
Yeah, you did.
Or oh, maybe, I probably you might did have that a year this. Ago. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I know I lost my
review order. Of us or review of the game?
Review of us. There, I find it. You linked to a review at Internet Archive. You can leave reviews of items at Internet Archive. And in August of this year, 2024, Sprocket Mail left a review on our Enchanter podcast episode, our Enchanter episode of the podcast, and said, "This takes me back. I'm in my late 40s and now tearing up as I listen to this podcast. Enchanter was my first Infocom game. In retrospect, I should have held out for Wishbringer, which was much easier. But living in Soulkill, Alabama, and 11 years old at the time, with no real awareness or connection to the world, until the introduction of a Tandy 1000EX and an external 300 baud modem and a single game, Enchanter, I spent hours exploring the game, never finished it until a circumstance I call my older brother, but I loved every moment and learned so much. I distinctly remember that Enchanter is the game in which I learned the word incongruous. I didn't get to play other games until I was older in a different part of the US, and I held a part-time job when in high school to pay for them. I was an anomaly then, a Southern girl who loved Infocom and nerd culture, but Infocom games and the internet expanded my world. I'm so happy to retrace those steps here." Thank you, Sprocket Mail.
That is lovely.
Yeah.
I was right. You should have read that. That's great.
Yeah.
Go me. Go early Carrington. I used to be so wise.
So I saw that note in the show notes, and then I was just like, we always... I think we say in our things to leave a review on iTunes, right? Well, first of all, that's not a thing anymore. Like the iTunes app doesn't exist anymore. It's now Apple Podcasts. But so I found the Apple Podcasts app, which I don't think I've ever opened, and found two reviews there from the last year.
Nice.
I'm going to read a positive one and a not so positive one.
Uh-oh.
Which would you like to hear first?
I want to hear the positive one. You'd bring me down.
Someone, RH, said, somehow I managed to pocket dial a 1-star review a few years ago. I discovered this while digging into my account info on my phone. It showed me my reviews and I saw no comment 1-star review and I was horrified. I love this show. Keep up the great and twisty work.
So that gave us a 5. I guess we've averaged out by this person to be like a 2.5 now.
Yeah, right.
So you actually have to give us a whole bunch more 5-star reviews.
Write that wrong. And the other one is a three-star review. It says, lose the intro song.
What?
Not a bad podcast, but for God's sake, lose the stupid effing intro song. I can tolerate most things, but I almost turned off the podcast when I heard that nonsense. I don't know why it is so popular amongst the interactive fiction community. That said, the podcast itself was decent. The one on Zork actually had some new info. I recommend that if you're going to reference something, then research it prior. I think, and I'm not sure, is it really going to help, going to keep audiences captivated?
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I think we have to issue a refund.
Now, full refund to that person.
Well, so. I can't please everybody. I wouldn't want to please everybody.
No, I wouldn't want to.
So one person averaged out to 2.5, and right. That was our positive.
Right.
And the negative person actually gave us a 3. So, hey, negative person, you gave us a higher review than someone who really likes us.
It's
so
true.
We win.
Yeah. And
plus, if I don't get enough 3-star reviews, I won't appreciate the 5-star reviews. That's how it works, man. How it works with me.
That's right. And we said,
right,
and one of the people who liked us said we made them cry. So,
jeez. Achievement unlocked.
Holy moly.
Okay. Is that enough feedback?
I guess we have more.
Say,
but,
years worth of feedback.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, we don't read every. We don't can't read most people who write in. I do really appreciate it when people do. Like, it kind of comes out of nowhere, and you wake up one day, and then somebody's like, "Hey, I listened to a thing you did, and I liked it, or I hated it, or you made me think of this story." Those are my favorite ones. When somebody says you reminded me of something from their own life, or let me tell you a story of when I played the game. Those are the best. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great, and we do appreciate feedback, and we'll talk about at the end of the episode how you can send your feedback in. For this episode, we played Adventureland, which was the first Scott Adams adventure. Scott Adams ended up creating a company called Adventure International, and Adventureland was their first product. They ended up having 18 text adventures in this series. At one point, I had put in our possible things to do for future editions of the show. I said, play all Scott Adams games. Now that we've played the first one, no thank you. I don't think we're doing that.
No.
Yeah, that's off the list. Right. According to, I'm going to be cribbing rather heavily from because I did not actually play through the game. We'll talk about that. But so I read a lot about it. There's a blog that I quite enjoy called CRPG Adventures. And he wrote about Adventureland in 2015. And stealing from their research, he said Adventureland is the first ever adventure designed for a home computer. And it turns out to be terrible, but it's still significant.
Well, because you can see how, like, my first impression of Adventureland was this is clearly written by somebody who played Adventure, the main
Colossal,
thing.
Colossal Cave Adventure. Mm-hmm.
And said, I'd like to do something like that. And was like, it's very, very inspired by. And like, but if I was going to make one of these on a TRS-80, like in BASIC, as Scott Adams did, like what could I do with these limitations? And, you know, made a parser and put out a game. And it's a very much a collect the treasures and put them in one place game, like just boil down to the bare minimum with the
yes, there's no attempt at a plot. There's no anything. It's just like there's a certain 15, I think, a certain number of treasures, and you need to solve 13. The puzzles. 13? Solve the puzzles, find the treasures, put them in a place, dot, 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 profit. That's it.
Profit, yes.
And I mean, you can really tell it's an early game in that it's a two-word parser. It's barely more than two-word output a lot of the times. And the screen output is unique. It's different than we got used to with, you know, with like you type something and it like scrolls to give you an answer or something. This kind of had like different panes, one with your what you see, one with your inventory, and one where
you
type.
And I never got used to it. I've now played the game twice, and I never got used to it. Like I think I've played too many Infocom games now. The Infocom standard of, you know, the whole description, everything comes up every time, and maybe at the top of the screen you have the name of the room you're in or something like that, or the time of day or something like Infocom does. But I couldn't get used to this parser where the down below is the, you know, what do you want me to do part, and then in the top half of the screen, non-scrolling, is the list of like the name, the room you're in, some objects you can see in the most obvious exits. And I would constantly not look at the top of the screen and read that and have to keep things in my head, which I shouldn't have to keep in my head. I don't know. Just the parser layout didn't work for me, but I think it's because I've been trained in the Infocom style.
Yes. Yeah. And if this was your first adventure game, this would make perfect sense because there would have been no other way. And this was a lot of people's first adventure game because it was basically the first adventure game, other than, you know, ports of Colossal Cave and Zork and things. So,
The parser refers to itself as your puppet. This is this program will allow you to have an adventure without ever leaving your armchair. You'll find yourself in a strange new world. You'll be able to examine, take, and otherwise manipulate objects, and blah, blah, blah. I'll be your puppet in this adventure. And so it's, again, having to, you know, no one's played this before. You got to, like, explain to a brand new to the whole idea of adventure games to that kind of audience, like, what you're going to do. So you have to say, you got to command me with two words and give examples. So you got to kind of put yourself in the mindset of somebody who's not just not played a game like this, but never even heard of this kind of thing before.
Sure. Yeah. And it had to have been amazing. I mean, even though, I mean, I doubt that the percentage of people who started this game who finished it is probably, you know, 10% or less. It had to have been an amazing, like, oh, here's a little bit of a world. Here's a, you know, especially in whatever, 1978 or whenever.
In a world where, like, software is, like, not even really a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of think when this comes out, you buy computers, and from the people who make the computers, software is kind of operating systems and maybe big inventory control systems that you buy on a contract from somebody. It's not, there's no idea that you're going to walk into a Computerland store and buy a game.
Right.
Like, it's crazy how early this is.
Yeah. How did you play it? On what system, emulator?
Two different ways. The first way, I had some difficulty finding, like, the text version of this.
Yeah.
Like, I searched for the Wazaday Adventureland, but that's the Saga version, the graphical one, and I wanted to play the original text one. Mm-hmm. You sent me a link to an archive.org version. It's a pirated copy that launches a RapidDOS menu for, I think, five or six different of the games. But it seems to have a bug in that one. Like, even though there's a point early on where you got to use keys to unlock a door, it wouldn't work for me. I would have the keys, the door would not unlock. Like, there's some sort of bug in that. I should have looked at the code, I guess, if it's just a basic
thing. Could have looked in Softside magazine.
Right. And so I found a different .po disk image for the Apple II, and I ended up playing that one. And that one I could play all the way through. And then when I replayed it, yesterday we did RCR? Yeah, so yesterday we recorded RCR. It said, hey, let's do one of these. And I said, I could play it again by tomorrow. Having played it once, you can knock out this game in 20 minutes. And I played an online version at BBC something. BBCmicro.co.uk has an online version. So I played the BBC Micro version. And it has a huge advantage over the Apple II version. Multicolor text. The Apple II version that I was playing was just the green text.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's hard to keep track of, like, the top part of the screen is different than the bottom part of the screen. But in the BBC Micro version, it's different colors. So it's really obvious, like, the top part in yellow or whatever was the room description, and below is the stuff I'm doing now. And that makes it much easier. So I do recommend the multicolor version of the text. That really helps with the parser layout, for me anyway. But I still do not like the layout.
Okay. Ask me how I played it and how I got there.
How'd you play it? How far? Yeah.
So these are notes that I took quite a while ago. First, I learned as I was looking at the game, the Z code conversion of this game is certifiably buggy. Fine. I won't play the Z code conversion. So next, I wanted to play the Atari version because I'm an Atari 8-bit guy. The text version at AtariMania.com was for cassette only. There was no disc version, and cassette is too painful, even under emulation. I'm just not going to play with cassette tapes. So fine. And then Atari Mania also had the Saga version, the graphical version that came out years later. But I lasted 2 minutes in that one because there were poor room descriptions, and if you missed it, like, you know, you're in the forest. If you missed that, you couldn't see it again. You couldn't.
Oh, goodness.
So that was a deal killer for me. So I'm like, fine, not going to play the Atari version. Then I downloaded the TRS-80 version, which was released in 1987.
Oh, so that would be a later one because the original was TRS-80, right?
I guess so. Yeah, but this couldn't have been a graphical version because the TRS-80 didn't. I don't know. Whatever I downloaded.
Or it's graphical for them.
I tried it, right? Two giant blocks on the just big squares on the screen in white. I tried it in the TRS-80 GP emulator on my Mac. It wouldn't boot. Didn't work. So fine. Gave up on that. Found a link to the DOS version at IFDB. The DOS version, that link was bad. Didn't boot. So then I asked 4 a.m.
It's like the first puzzle.
I asked 4 a.m. What was the name of that adventure game, all the adventure games in one program thing that you made? It's Pitch Dark. And does it play Scott Adams games? No, it's Infocom. Thanks for nothing, 4. And the IFDB also has a link to a bunch of Atari adventures, Atari8GM.zip, a bunch of Atari adventures in one file. I found Adventureland on disk 5. The text version, and that game, the entire game is this in this obnoxious script font that looks like cursive writing, so hard to read, so impossible for my 50-plus-year-old eyes to read. I could not. It's a lot of eyes.
Get that whole fly thing.
Even with that many eyes, I could not And finally, there was a link to play it on Internet Archive, and I just downloaded the disk file and loaded it in Virtual 2, and that worked. And then a couple days later, you sent me an email saying that you were stuck and about the keys and don't play the version I sent you. So you sent me another version. And so then I finally got it running, and then I noticed on the back, found the box art at Atari Mania, scans of the box art, and the back of the box, it says completion time 1 month, which I believe is a lie. Based on my personal experience.
Loading time 1 month.
Right. Yeah. It was difficult to get the game working. And I think that you should put a link to the working version that you finally.
Sure. Cause I would still have it on my computer.
It was frustrating just to get the game working. And then once the game was working on my Apple II emulator, I found it frustrating. I did not enjoy it. That's my capsule.
After all that.
That's my capsule review. I honestly tried to play it a couple of times. I found the puzzles opaque. The lack.
Yeah, either like super crazy easy or bonkers obscure. No middle ground.
And it had some of those things where you had to do certain things twice in order to make it work. Like, you say the magic word to make the thing, make the rug fly or whatever, and it doesn't work the first time, and you've got it. So I honestly tried to play it for a while, then I gave up, and then I did all those things I talked about, and then I tried it another time, and it wasn't fun. And as we have discussed before, games should be fun. And then so yesterday, you and I recorded the RCR podcast. We had a great time. It was a fantastic hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And we decided we're going to record this today. So I'm just like, fine. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to find a walkthrough, and I'm going to walk my way through. I'm just going to, just to see how the game ends.
Yeah, because the whole game is like 40 commands or something. Like,
right. Well, this walkthrough was, they had it to 150. The walkthrough that I picked. I don't know. So I'm just trying to just not think, just read and type what it says. The first time I did it, it didn't work. For some reason, I tried to get the fish, I tried to drop the fish in order to get the points for them, the golden fish treasure. And it said the fish escaped back into the lake. So I didn't get the points.
I think you can't drop the fish till you get into the stump. I mean,
In the stump, but okay. Whatever. So I was like, fine, quit, play again, restart. And the second time, this was frustrating. There's a part in the game where you can get chiggers, little mites attached to your leg. And when they attack you, they are an inventory item. So as I'm doing the walkthrough, at one point I go to catch fish. It was the fish again. Catch the golden fish with the golden net. And it said I was carrying too much because I had.
Because you can only have six items, which is a crazy limited inventory.
And so at that point, I'm just like, even with the walkthrough, two attempts, I can't win this game. I'm done. Goodbye.
And the map is awkward. Unlike a lot of games where, worst case scenario, again, I don't want to spoil stuff through you, spoiler fence, but you got to go to the place with the mud to get rid of the chiggers. With an Infocom game or whatever, you'd be like, okay, kind of pause the walkthrough, look at your map, let me go six places west and two north, use the mud, and then reverse that and go back to where I was and pick up from the walkthrough. This has a lot of things where you have to go like in one direction to get to some place, but you have to use a different command to come back and it's awkward to move around this map. Even having made a map for it, I found it difficult to follow. So it's a pain if you suddenly have to like leave to go to a particular place because you've run out of inventory room. So yeah, I hated that part of it.
Yeah.
Did not like. Another pain I felt was the two-word parser, but a different pain than I thought I'd feel. So when I played the Infocom games, I honestly, as we have established early in the show, I take everything for granted. I did take it for granted, mostly because I was kind of in my mind poo-pooing the great Infocom parser. You can type full sentences. Because the reality is when I play the games, I don't type full sentences. I type really two-word commands, even in Infocom. I type go north, I type whatever. Like, I don't say, you know, slay the dragon, my good man, if you will. I just, you know, hit dragon with rock, right, or whatever. Yeah. So it's, I don't, at most I use something like that, but usually it's two-word things. So I didn't think it would be a big deal using a two-word parser. But I did butt up against it a lot, because there's a lot of things where I couldn't think of a single, like, how do you turn off the lamp if you can't type turn off. You got to tell me what's one word that means turn off.
Yeah, you could try the word extinguish, which is a word that it doesn't know.
It does not know. No, you got to choose unlight, which is a word that doesn't exist. But okay, boy howdy. But I found weirdly the thing that was bugging me about the parser was not that it was the limited to two words. It was when I had to use two words. Like, you can't type just up. You have to type go up. And so I was so used to doing occasionally one word things that I found it was actually the limitation of requiring two words that I bumped into more often, being limited down to two words. And yet at the same time, you can type things like just inventory. So it will accept some things in one word. And there's one point where you have to type a one word verb without anything else to like solve one puzzle. And that took me forever as well, because I got so in my mind, if it's got to be two words and only two words, always two words. So I found the parser annoying again, because I was used to Infocom, because I've been spoiled by my non-medium towel.
Yes. So,
yeah. But it bugged me. It bugged
like,
me.
There's a bunch of things. It bugged you like being bitten by chiggers?
Yes. The six item inventory limit was, that's serious limitation. Like, sometimes Infocom games would bug me. It's like, I can't believe I can only carry 15 things. I had no idea how good I had it until you get something where you can only carry six. And there's sometimes where you have to have like five items to be able to solve a thing. Like you need, and like, so it's a hassle. So the inventory limit was, and I get, again, it's a limitation trying to make this on like a 4K TRS-80 or whatever the heck would have been available at the time. So right. I understand he's working with limitations imposed, but boy, that bugged me. Early on in the game, right at the very beginning, nearly, you find an old-fashioned brass lamp.
Yes.
Is that because of adventure?
I think it must be.
Is it just something so common in like D&D and adventure games? That it seemed like such a specific thing. Why are there brass lamps in all these games?
I believe that was in Colossal Cave, and this was heavily sort of based on that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know though. I don't know if brass lamps are a thing for spelunkers. I can't imagine they are anymore, but maybe back in the late 70s they were.
Yeah, maybe. So you can read things, but not signs for some reason. You get a sign, you can't say read sign. You got to accept that it exists in the inventory. The unlight thing got me. There's a maze in this game and ugh mazes, like just the worst.
Based on what I read, I never got to the maze. It said it was only like six rooms. It wasn't so bad.
It's six rooms, but it just like every maze, it's like each room has five directions that take you back to where you don't think you're going to go. And say, well, doing this one, you've got to go down, and that one, you've got to go up. But coming back down from where you go doesn't. I just don't like mazes in general.
Yeah, it's sure.
It just feels like a buggy thing in a game. Feels like so. Anyway, I'm being very negative about the game, and I think it's because. And it's making me feel Canadian guilt. The reality is, I think the game doesn't hold up. Like for any, to play this other than for historical interest, like it doesn't work anymore as a game. It's so limited, it's like so early that it's more like a proof of concept than an enjoyable experience. Like it should be a proof of concept that was five rooms and two puzzles, but to like stretch it out to a bunch of rooms. It's not a huge map, but a bunch of rooms and a maze and 13 items. It's too much. Like it overstays its welcome as a game, I think. Mm. But okay. But I agree with the review you had said before that it is of great historical interest and import. But it's not fun.
It's a thing I read I want to ask you about back to the CGRP Adventures blog. He said, there's a weird bit where you wander into the memory chip of a computer. Did you get there?
No.
He said, there's nothing to interact with in this area, and I suspect it's just a bit of programmer's humor. Not that it's funny, but it's memorably strange.
No, you go to the... No, there's the... When you die, you go to that...
you can go to Limbo. Misty room or whatever. No, he did it. He showed a screenshot where it says, like, you're in the computer's memory,
That must be an Easter egg or something. Played through the game twice now. I did not encounter that.
I am in the memory chip of a computer. I took a wrong turn. Obvious exits are east, and that's it. Okay, I was wondering if that was part of the game that you saw, or
no?
I guess
neat. Nope.
I'm glad he wasted several bites on that.
So, because it's so limited, you end up with puzzles that aren't great because the puzzles really are just you need to get an item and just like collect the things, dump into place. And so every item is just a key, or if you possess one item, it enables you to take another one and it knows how to combine them. But also it means the room descriptions are incredibly sparse and the writing is incredibly sparse. So there's not like, this is the very definition of a game that is not interactive fiction. Like there's no plot, but there's also not a lot.
This is text adventure. Not interactive fiction.
Yeah. The opening line, the opening, like the Infocom's Zork, the opening, you're standing in open field west of a White House with a boarded up front door. There's a small mailbox here. Like there's something timeless to that. And this one is like, I'm in a forest. there you go. And again, I get that it's an imposed limitation, but it means you're not reading text that is funny or like it can't be carried by the text.
You just said 20 minutes ago you like compose limitations.
This is too limited. I want a 60% towel, not a threadbare, scratchy 1.5 out of 10 towel. This is too low. Like, so, it did, but that said, this would make me appreciate another game more. So that part's going to work. I got more stuff to say about the game and the puzzles, but I think they should be saved for past spoiler.
Okay.
But overall, I'd say the game, unfortunately, doesn't hold up except as a historical document, is what I would say.
I
don't mean to be mean about it, but it's right. Just not fun.
Based on what I played of it, I mean, like I said, I did not have fun with it. And if somebody has fun with it, then great. But I think that...
It nearly killed the show.
It did. Nearly killed. I blame you, Scott Adams. okay. Well, do we do stuff before the spoiler fence?
We pick our next game.
Pick our next game. Okay.
Don't want to be spoiled because I'm going to talk about things that are like actual solutions to the puzzles when we jump over.
Somebody, right? It'll be spoilers for me. I can't listen after the spoiler fence. Like you will continue the podcast without me. I'll take off my headphones here and just watch you. Somebody, I want to see if I can find this one more piece of mail that somebody made a good suggestion.
Oh, nice.
I can't find it now, but basically, look, I want to play something that's, I haven't played an adventure game in a long time that I enjoyed. So I would like to do that. And, someone suggests that we go ahead and do Magnetic Scrolls or Level 9, mm-hmm. which were the couple of British companies, which I believe were Infocom adjacent, Infocom equivalent.
Yes,
I was looking at Level 9. I'm just like, okay, I've heard of this company. They did a lot of great games. They're very well related. And their first game is called Colossal Adventure, and it's their version of Colossal Cave. And I'm just not up for it. I'm
no.
sorry. I think that we should play one of these games, but I don't know which one, and not their first one.
Okay, I'm good with any of them, but I also think maybe not a Colossal Cave remake.
Yeah, I don't know. So we should try Level 9. You think?
Yeah, I think we'll try a Level 9 game.
Okay. All right. I'm sure that people have recommended hundreds of them to us, and
I don't know if there are hundreds of them.
Well, yeah. Let's see if we have any specific recommendations.
But I agree, maybe skipping Colossal Adventure, and then looks like the next one is Adventure Quest, which sounds suspiciously like just continuing it. Leaping into something later might not be a bad idea. Yeah, it looks like Jewels of Darkness was a trilogy. Colossal Adventure, Adventure Quest, and Dragon Adventure. So maybe we avoid those and maybe do like Snowball, the first of the Silicon Dreams trilogy or something. Or maybe avoid the trilogy at all.
Yeah, no, let's not do trilogy. No trilogies. Not, yeah. let's, I don't want to, yeah. How about, let's, what is The Price of Magic spelled funny? It's a sequel. See, it's a sequel to Myglar the Magician.
Guys, that's how they get you.
Yeah. What's Red Moon?
Oh, Red Moon. Red Moon's a good title.
Red,
I agree.
Red Moon Crystal, a powerful source of magic, has been stolen and must be recovered to save the county of Baskalos from destruction.
Oh, no, not the county of Baskalos.
I know. I vacationed there once. It was great. They have really good taffy.
Now, there's a recommended list for the best of Level 9.
Let's do that.
And it said, number one is Ingrid's Back from 1988.
Does that mean is like as in Ingrid has returned or Ingrid's backside spine?
Oh, but see, Gnome Ranger it's a sequel to Gnome Ranger, which is their second number two. I think we'd want to do Gnome Ranger, not maybe. Well,
what else is recommended?
And then the Scapegoat is the next one, which is looks like a standalone thing.
Escape Coast to Coast?
Alan Chance was on an undercover mission trying to infiltrate a drugs gang. All was going well, but then something or someone alerted the gangsters, and they killed Alan and escaped, taking his colleague Sarah as a hostage. His fellow police falsely blame a mistake of Alan's for tipping off the criminals. Alan has 3 nights as a ghost to disprove this. Oh, it sounds like a mystery one. You don't really like mystery ones.
I don't like mysteries.
Yeah. It's a detective skills. Oh, yeah. Mm. No.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Sorry. Nope. Just keep going. All right. What else did they like?
The Secret Diary of Alan Mole, aged 13 and three quarters.
Okay.
Let's the highest rated of them, if you sort by rating, is Gnome Ranger.
But that was a sequel.
That's the original of them. There were sequels to it. The gnome Ingrid Bottomlow has displeased her family by her un-gnome-like behavior, such as going off to university and getting an education. She's been teleported from her village by a faulty scroll and must find her way back.
Okay.
And looks like you need a novella in order to play parts 2 and 3. So what? Okay. Maybe we can't do level 9 at the moment.
Level 9, it's too advanced. Too hard for us. Too difficult. Too trilogy-y. Okay, how about Magnetic Scrolls?
Scrolls.
If you, dear listener, want us to play a level 9 game, tell us.
You got to tell us
which one to play that is not part of a trilogy, or is not a sequel, and does not involve a mystery, and we will enjoy. Let's look at Magnetic Scrolls.
Yes. The first one that comes up for me is The Pawn.
The Pawn. I've heard of the interactive fiction for the Sinclair QL. Geez, how do you emulate that? Published by Sinclair Research in 1985. Graphics were added later.
I like the idea that you have another one that you're going to spend like 2 months trying to figure out how to play. That tickles me.
The player's character is knocked unconscious and awakens in the fairyland of Kurovina, a silver bracelet around their wrist and cannot be removed. A general election is about to be held to decide whether King Eric will be replaced by a dwarf whose campaign promise is to rid dungeons of mazes of any sort.
Okay, I'm digging that.
The character must interact with others and perform tasks for them, gathering objects that will be needed for later tasks in order to escape from Kurovina and return to reality.
It won Best Adventure Game of the Year in 1987 at the Golden Joystick Awards.
Okay, excellent. And it was available for a bunch of platforms, including Mac and MS-DOS, so we don't need to find a Sinclair QL emulator necessarily. I've heard of this, and I think people have recommended it to us. And I know Fish! Exclamation point. I know people have recommended that as well.
Which tickles you? Which would you prefer? Do you want to be a fish, or do you want to be a?
Well, I want to read about. Can I read about the fish? This is the part. This is the part. This is, listen to Kay googling for 20 minutes. This.
I like it. It could be a spinoff podcast, and it's just you like typing.
Yeah. According to the game scenario, the interdimensional espionage sends operatives throughout the dimensions to fight evil. This is done by possessing someone's body and controlling his actions. The player is Agent 10, who enjoys his leave of absence in the body of a goldfish. He learns that an interdimensional terrorist group named the Seven Deadly Fins have stolen a focus wheel. In this first part of the game, the player can visit three dimensions, a forest with a smithy, a hippie van, and a recording studio.
A hippie van.
Once the three parts of the wheel are gathered, I'm not going to read. I think it's actual spoilers. So I think you actually do play a fish in part of that game. So do you want to play the pawn or?
I want to do the fish. The fish sounds fun. Okay. Even if it didn't win a golden whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I say we play the fish.
We play the fish. Let's see what platform.
Or just fish with exclamation
points. Fish. Yeah, no, it's fish. Fish. Amiga, Atari ST, Commodore 64, Macintosh, MS-DOS, ZX Spectrum. Okay, so yes, we should be able to play Fish by nice. Magnetic Scrolls.
By Magnetic Scrolls, I like it.
Great, we have made a choice. I will see you.
We'll never hear from us again.
2026 for the next episode.
Still out there being a fish.
Great. Okay.
I dig it. I dig it. I have never played this game. I've never heard of this game before. I've heard of Magnetic Scrolls, but I am completely unaware of the game Fish. So it'll be fun to play something, you know, that I have no experience with at all.
Yeah, sounds like fun. And I look great. That'll be great.
It'd be funny if you play a goldfish. Yeah. If I was writing a text adventure, because, you know, I did that once. If I was writing a text adventure where you play a goldfish, I would have it like, if you keep things in the inventory too long, you forget about them. Like, you can only remember things for like 10 moves, and then it's like gone. You don't know where that room is. Like, you have to solve it with very few moves.
No, I just know I would have the command glub.
Glub. Glub.
Glub.
I dig it.
Excellent. All right. And so that's Magnetic Scrolls. If there's a level 9 game you want us to play, email us at guru@monsterfeet.com and we'll think about that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Spoiler fence time?
Spoiler fence time. Okay. So we are going to leap over the spoiler balustrade, I believe we used to call it, and discuss. I'm going to tell Kay about solutions to actual puzzles in this game. So if you have, for some reason, been enchanted by our review so far of this game, and you can't wait to play it yourself, you might not want to keep listening, because we are going to talk about specific puzzles, the end of the game, spoil the intricate plot, and that can ruin it for you. So, like, part of the fun of any of these games is figuring stuff out on your own. So, but if you know you're not going to play, or you've already played it, or what have you, then you can join us on the other side of the spoiler fence, where we talk about we give you the skinny about the puzzles. Time for skinny puzzles. There's a skinny bear. Did you get to the part with the bear on the ledge?
I did not get to a bear.
So there's one part where you're on a ledge, and it's a place where you have to use a one word command. You just have to word jump, not jump across or like jump. It really bugged me when every once in a while I'd be like, oh, now it's only one word. So you jump across and there's a bear, and it's like a skinny bear. It's referred to as hungry. And so you would figure you got to feed it. Like there's sure. honey in the game. No. What you have to do is yell at the bear. To scare it off the ledge. So you have to yell, or you type the word scream, and it scares off the bear. It doesn't kill the bear, though. Later on, when you're at the very bottom, you find a woozy bear down below, which I was happy about. So the bear's just like, what the heck, man? Now, I bring this up because there's a review of this game on IFDB. It's a review by Gurian Guy in Portland. And talks about the game not being or being okay, but it's like, you know, puzzles are unfair and whatever. But then it's like their bear puzzle. I got to read you this. Best thing, better than anything we said. Am I the only one who, even at a young age, solved it by becoming completely frustrated with the bear and typing screw bear? The old parser only read the first three letters of every word. And the intended solution was apparently scream bear. So imagine my surprise when I typed screw bear and the game's response was, the bear is so startled it falls off the ledge. That is wonderful. What a great... So that tickled me very much.
People are into bears. There's nothing wrong with
that. I guess, yes.
But there was honey in the game.
Yes,
that is one of the prizes, right?
Yeah, you got to get the bottle so you can catch. You say then once you have the bottle, you say catch bees, and the bees go in the bottle. You need the bees to sting the dragon, and when you've caught the bees, you can then take the honey.
Can you feed the honey to the bear?
You can, but then you lose It's a thing you need.
Right.
Okay. So
it's a false.
Yeah. And so now you'll finish the game not having full points because you lost one of your treasures by feeding into the bear that's referred to as a hungry bear. So like,
come on. Which you're supposed to screw.
All right. Exactly. That's not what the honey is. That's not how you use the honey with this bear. I didn't like that in the game. You have to reuse items. It bugs me when I'm in the escape room in real life, and it bugs me in other games. I want everything to have a use and everything to have one and only one use. Because once I use an object, I no longer think of it as a thing to be used. And so I know that's my own limitation, but it bugs me. So in this, I didn't like the bottle, for instance, it's used for the fish and also for the bees. And so once I use a thing, I don't think I should use it elsewhere. So that bugs me in these games. I didn't enjoy that. And some items are just treasures, and some items are treasures that you also have to use before that you use them as a treasure. Like the golden net you use to catch the fish, but you also just have to have the net and drop it to get points. And so I don't know. I don't like that kind of thing. Bugs me.
But it lets you know what the treasures are. So there's no, that's kind of nice. They have asterisks around them. So
around them, right. So it makes it very clear that this is one of the treasures you will be dropping in the stump. But then you think, okay, then it's just not a thing I'm going to use. But but maybe it is a thing you're going to use.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. The bees die at random, which bugs me. So you catch the bees, you have to take the bees to sting the dragon. Although the clue you're given is dragon sting, but the clue should be sting dragon, but whatever. And they die at random. You put them in the bottle. Mm.
So once you get them, you've got to hustle over there to the dragon before they die.
Right. And I spent so long thinking I had missed something or I was doing it wrong because I got unlucky and I'd restore my game and I would just die again. But it's not actually doing like a random seed at the start of the game where you have so much time. Like you can reload your game and every time you reload, like it's like every time you move with the bees, there's a random check and maybe they'll die, maybe they won't. But because they died on me like three times in a row, I assumed, oh, I must start. I've started again. Mm. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's not fair.
That's not good design. Yeah. I didn't like that.
It's not the bee's knees. Yeah.
And no, it is not. So there's swamp gas at one point, and you have to get the gas.
Excuse yourself.
Right. And you find an empty wine bladder at some point. And so for me, I was like, okay, I get it. I'm gonna put the gas in the bladder. And so that's how you would carry it around. But like you can't type fill bladder. You have to just type like take gas, which for some reason was really counterintuitive to me. I had to look up, use a walkthrough to say, well, they'll just take the gas. I'm like, oh, duh. It just doesn't feel like a thing you can take because it's not tangible. So I tried everything with the bladder instead. It's just, no, if you have the bladder in your inventory, you can just use take gas. That bugged me.
That's weird.
What else have I got here? There's a lot of learn by death in this. Like you mentioned, there's like things you do twice. Like there's the lamp. You rub the lamp, genie comes out, you get a diamond bracelet. You have to rub the lamp again. I think you get a diamond ring first. And then if you just happen to rub the lamp again, now you get a diamond bracelet. Rub lamp a third time, now you die. It's like, oh, come on, man. So
that was amusing.
Right.
When I read it, I didn't get there, but when I read about that, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, the genie is just like, you're greedy.
Okay, but imagine it's 1979. You're an 8-year-old kid playing this on a TRS-80. It takes 4 to 6 minutes to save your game and about 25 minutes to load it. Then these kind of things are cruel. That's the reason this game takes so long, is because every time you do something that randomly kills you, you've got a half an hour load time from cassette on your TRS-80.
I thought limitations built character.
They build angry, angry characters. What else I got? The jumping bugged me. At the end of the game, the way you win is you have all 13 treasures. You're in the stump, and you put the you just drop the treasures there, and then you win. Eventually, when you realize you have to type the word score, because it only checks if you're winning when you ask for your score is. So you drop the last item there, like thinking, okay, I must have something else to do. Mm-hmm. And then the walkthrough eventually told me, no, when you drop the 13th item, now type the word score, and then it'll say, oh yeah, you. But by the way, you've already won. You just missed it. It's like, oh.
I forgot to tell you, you won the game. One of the things I read about in that same blog post was there's a lava flow at the bottom of the maze, and it appears to be an object hidden within it. But the person who wrote CRGP Adventures couldn't figure out how to get it, and I was curious how you got it.
You dam the lava, and that's when you get something.
Damn you, lava.
Damn you, lava. Because I remember I had, that's another thing I had to look up. I never thought to use the word damn, like block lava or whatever. And it only works if you have the bricks. You can't like it. So, and then it's a really hot thing. I can't remember. And you have to put water on it first before you touch it. So you find a thing and it says it's a glowing fairy stone or something. And then you pour water, I think is the verb you have to use. Then you can take that item. It's one of your treasures. But you get the swamp gas in the bladder, and then you go to where the bricks are, you drop the bladder, say ignite gas, that blows a hole in the bricks, but you're fine. Then you can take the bricks, but they're on the other side of the where you got to jump. And if you jump with the bricks in your inventory, you fall to your death. So instead you have to take the bricks and then use the magic carpet to fly yourself up to where the dragon is. Make sure you don't have any mud on you or the dragon will eat you. Like, it's so convoluted.
It's the magic
carpet.
And now you
have the bricks.
Right? They notice that the magic carpet, they spelled Aladdin wrong.
They spell Aladdin wrong on the, like there's in the maze, it says Aladdin was here. And it's missing a D.
Yeah.
It's like, who's, well, maybe it's just some other dude. It's
like, oh, you're
it's
right.
Like, my carpets aren't very magic. It's Al Aladdin was here. And Al's like, what do I got to do to put you in a new carpet today?
But so you had to look up clues in order to finish the game.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Holy cow, okay. A bunch.
All right.
I don't see how anybody ever solved this thing without a walkthrough. I mean, there's some things that are really obvious. Like you climb a tree and there's a spider web in there and the web has writing on it. This is chopper down.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess you'll go to the base of the tree and type chop tree. Like some puzzles are that easy and some puzzles are like insanely convoluted. So I don't know. There's no middle ground in this.
Yeah.
There's no way I could solve this without a walkthrough. Not a chance. No way you could solve it, period.
No, even with a walkthrough, I couldn't do
it. You can't even run it.
Couldn't do it.
So there's a lot of learn by death. There's a lot of, it's once you, like now that I've played through the game twice, like you can knock this game out in 10 minutes. The hardest part is to remember where things
you were. Can knock this game out. Right?
No, but really it's just like, wait, I know what's my next thing. I'll need this bit of inventory and to not get yourself trapped in a place where you can't get out. Like don't go down in the maze if you don't have the carpet because you won't be able to get back out again. Like you got to kind of know the things that get you out of the dead end spaces. But once you know that, it's not that complicated a game.
Anyway, it was amazing that this could be run on a TRS-80 back in the day off a cassette drive with 2.5K of memory or whatever it was. You know, that's cool. But
well, we do this podcast with 1K.
Right.
You. You missed the show, huh?
I did not miss this.
So that's what I got to say about the game.
Right. Yeah, that's enough.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not upset that I played it, but I'm also not motivated to play more of the Scott Adams games, other than part of me masochistically thinks, what about like playing maybe on my own one of the later games? Like, did they get a lot better? Like, once he had knocked out 12 more of these... Like, I'm sure the puzzles got better or whatever. You're going to get better at doing it if you do a bunch
maybe.
Of
things. Maybe. My piece, my lovely wife, had Pirate's Cove Adventure on cartridge for her. I don't remember now if it was a VIC-20 or a Commodore 64. But she had played that back in the day. But I'm not motivated to play that. And, yeah. Sorry, Scott.
Sorry, Scott. I do feel guilty when I say negative things about a game. I gotta say, eats me up. But I couldn't. Like, it is what it is. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I didn't have fun playing the game. I muscled through it, but it felt more like an obligation. If it was a longer game, I wouldn't have finished it.
Yeah. Well, luckily you had your $5 worth of quarters.
Lucky. It is lucky. Mom gave me $5. I could get through the game. So I think that's it okay. For this game.
All right,
but we're back baby. Okay,
I'm happy to talk with you again.
And you too.
I have missed you. I didn't want to actually play this game. I just wanted to talk to
you. Just want to hang out.
Yeah.
And I made, but you had to play the game. I come with caveats. Okay, so let's wrap it up. Feedback thingy. This has been Eaten by a Gru, the interactive, let's see if I remember the ending of this thing, the interactive fiction podcast. If you want to, you can send us email at gru@monsterfeet.com. And do we still do Mastodon? Where the heck do people want to send us if they want to send us small things?
I have moved. I still have my Mastodon. I have moved to Blue Sky as my primary.
I think I'm mostly on Blue Sky now,
daily
too.
Daily driver. I'm really enjoying Blue Sky. I'm talking
what
about
are you on
that.
Blue Sky?
Savitz, Savetz.
Yeah, I think Savitz. I'm my full name. I think I'm Carrington Vanston because some other weenie swept in and got Carrington.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
Some sore.
Send it to Kay. Go to Savitz, Blue Sky, and you'll get it to me.
Yeah.
People don't need to talk to me directly.
Yeah. And we're on Mastodon too, but
Mastodon, yeah, on the old bytes.space, yeah. I think it was. I'm on all the things. I don't know. You'll find me somewhere. Send us email, whatever. If you want to help other people find the podcast, we'd appreciate it. Give us a nice review on iTunes or whatever the heck it's called now. 5 stars is the way you tell us you love
us. Apple Podcast app or whatever it is.
3 stars is apparently the average. Let's see if we can bring that up. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com, and a 2-word parser would never be enough to express our affection to MC Frontalot for letting us use his song as our theme tune. We like it, so, you know, too bad for you. Next up will be Fish with an exclamation point by Magnetic Scrolls. Let's see if Magnetic Scrolls can once and for all kill this show. We'll find out. Thank you for podcasting with me again.
Thank you. Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
That was fun.
We did it.
Yeah, I missed doing the show with you, man.
Yeah, I missed it too.
It was super fun. Super, super fun. Have you played any Magnetic Scroll games? Are they super hard? Are they Infocom size?
I know nothing about them. All I know is I believe they're Infocom level.
Are they graphical? You know, I didn't think to ask.
I don't know.
Oh. Are we going to see a picture of a fish?
It's a text adventure.
It's a text adventure.
Yeah.
I've heard good things about Magnetic Scrolls. People keep talking about how good they are.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find maybe people have been punking us, though. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe we got him to play that.
There's an Apple II version, so I suppose we'll both probably shoot for that.
Almost certainly that's what I would play.
Yeah, yeah. And if that doesn't work, whatever, I'll go for the DOS version, because DOSBox is always, like, reliable.
Looks like it was on the Acorn Archimedes. Maybe I'll try to find that one.
Okay.
But probably not.